audio of the calendar contacts, plus update, and remark that this is not channeled. The RK files. Over a period of 3 years, a Carindian gentleman who chooses to be called RK provided a series of 21 informative and detailed communications on subjects ranging from United Worlds Alliance government to Carindian history to many problems facing our little blue marble in space. While some of the information in them is no longer applicable in today's world, they serve as an introduction to the Carindians and the United Worlds Alliance. The majority of the content is as relevant in the 21st century as it was when it was received, and in some cases even more so. Two other files are included that were received much later. The messages included in Series 1 were received in October and November of 1988. They were released on floppies, remember those? Which explains the reference to erasing the diskette in Message G. Introduction, Part 1. Love and light, my Terran friends. From beyond the night, I send you the greetings of the United Worlds Alliance and the planet Carinda, via the new age medium of the personal computer. The availability of inexpensive computer equipment to the world's citizens has given to us an excellent high-tech way to communicate with your people. We much prefer this to the more common approach that you call channeling and telepathy. Let me now introduce myself. My selected name is RK, which is no more than the pronunciation of the initials of the name I use when I am present amongst you. If it will aid you in understanding my work, you may think of it as being the acronym of the title, Representative of Carinda. I have been chosen to serve as a liaison between my people and yours, much as Bob Renord has been since our first contact with him in 1961. Now, after his 27 long years acting as the exclusive source of information about the United Worlds Alliance and my people, we have agreed to his request to begin this new era of more direct communication with your world. To establish this, I have become, so to speak, Bob's opposite number on our side. Just as he has served as your only access to us, so I will now be our primary channel to you. If any questions are to be answered or any information to be presented, it will be my privilege to do these things. Bob will of course continue to be actively involved in our operations on Earth, but it is my honor to function as the go-between through which all of your people may have access to us, with Bob's capable assistance. Allow me now to deliver a fair warning. If you anticipate the type of message delivered by other channels, then what is to follow is not for you. If your expectations run to the mystical or the psychic, go no further. We fully support the work of those who deliver such messages, but they are not our focus of interest. If you want your extraterrestrials to be perfect, godlike beings, then we, who are only imperfectly human, will no doubt disappoint you. If, however, you care about the behind-the-scenes events that are now shaping your society and your destiny, if you are curious as to the nature of some of your visitors, then what is to come will satisfy your needs and offer the enlightenment you seek. With the prologue now finished, I will use the rest of this communication to provide insight into the Alliance and its operations on your world. As I stated earlier, the United Worlds Alliance has been in contact with you since 1961. Although our presence in this system began several years before then. In the beginning, it was our goal to undertake a program that would educate and elevate you to the level needed to become a candidate for protectorate status in the UWA, the first step in the process leading to full membership. At that time, we did not discern any substantial impediments to this goal. The Confederation, commonly known to you as the Federation, although it was very actively involved on Earth, did not challenge our presence, but gave us no encouragement or aid, nor did previous dealings with them lead us to expect their open cooperation. It must be explained here that the primary difference between the UWA and the Confederation is in the level of adherence to what your people know as non-interference laws. It has been the strict and invariable policy of the Confederation to abide by these laws without exception, no matter what the provocation might be to do otherwise. The Alliance has, through long experience, learned that a much looser interpretation is often called for, and has broadened the directives to permit activities on other worlds that are unheard of in the Confederation. Earth's present situation is a prime example, as we shall soon see. Our work here has created much tension and controversy between our groups. While there is no open hostility between our organizations, neither are there other than formal diplomatic relations. This is the principal reason that Alliance presence has never been acknowledged by the Confederation in its contacts with your people, and why we in turn will not corroborate their spokespersons or their communications to your people. The Confederation has its tasks and we have ours. What, then, are our activities on Earth that have generated this intense division? To answer this, we must now introduce into the cast of players a third party, which over the years, and by their own desires, have come to be known as Omegans. Historically, the Omegans are descended from a group of rebels that originated within the Confederation many years ago. As there is in any form of government, no matter how benign or peaceful, there were some to whom power and wealth were consuming passions. However, the peaceful, egalitarian ways of the Confederation rendered such goals impossible within its social and cultural dominion. These malcontents thus were driven by their insatiable lusts to leave their systems. From their exile they worked within the infrastructure of many planets to enlist others of similar desires, and their numbers grew slowly into a substantial force. In the late 18th century, the actual date is unknown, they arrived on Earth. Although this solar system is under Confederation jurisdiction, Earth is uncommitted because of the Confederation's non-interference laws that disallow them from presenting to your people the opportunity to join with them. Your level of advancement is inadequate to permit the full contact with you that is prerequisite as a prelude to their offer. This non-alignment made Earth for the Omegans' plans. As well, your basically militaristic history gave them a great advantage, as it was their intention to manipulate your warrior instincts, in order to groom your people into an irresistible military force able to attack and overpower other planets. The invention of nuclear fission weapons was mainly due to the Omegan influence within your scientific and military institutions, although their actual use in warfare was of your own volition entirely. Indeed, it was this event that precipitated the intense interest of the Confederation and the Alliance in your world, although the UA did not consider actual programs on Earth until years later. Following World War II, the Omegan policy was to prevent the initiation of another major war, but to promote many small-scale conflicts to maintain your war readiness while their technological input into your military capability continued and grew in sophistication. Their most effective weapon, however, was psychological. The Omegans' principal tactic is fostering international distrust and hatred, to maintain a state of mutual suspicion that prevents the world's people from uniting in the common good. Remember that their policy is to build you into a potent, unstoppable military force with which to attack and dominate Confederation worlds in many systems. Ordinarily, the Alliance takes a hands-off approach and allows the Confederation to tend to its affairs. However, Omegan activities have been directed against the Alliance as well. In fact, their attacks on us led to the destruction of their base on their home planet of Cordon by an Alliance invasion force. After the successful routing of this base, the Council of Elder Masters and other Alliance policymakers deemed the Omegan influence crushed, and, as you say, they let their guard down. It was only several years later that we discovered that the Cordon facility had been sacrificed to create exactly the impression that we received. In fact, their governing bodies had been transferred to Earth, which is now the hub of Omegan operations. This is a very effective move, because your non-alignment prevents any outside organization from open intrusion into their activities. The vulnerability of your world to their attack also makes it imperative that they be fought only on a clandestine, non-military basis. This is the Alliance approach. By operating in the underground, we are able to counter-attack without forcing them into an open confrontation that would inevitably result in the complete destruction of your world. One advantage of our approach is that because the Omegans require your people for their purposes, they are unlikely to consider endangering you as long as they are not confronted overtly. Another factor that I shall not discuss at this time renders open conflict with the Alliance on Earth exactly what they do not want. Their enforced restraint has, however, created a deep hostility and anger that incites vicious retaliation in those cases where it will not result in peril to their programs. For this reason, it is of vital importance that you heed this warning. Under no circumstances are you to attempt to combat them on your own. Although they have need of you, they are ruthless, and any resistance will without question result in the deaths of everyone involved. If by some chance you do encounter them in a manner that removes any doubt as to their identity, do absolutely nothing except escape without delay. If their activities are so open that they can be uncovered by Terrans, rest assured that the Alliance already knows of them, and is handling the matter in the appropriate fashion. Bravery is a noble virtue, but trying to fight them by yourselves is not bravery, but foolishness, and it is indeed suicidal. Be aware that they exist, and allow us to combat them. We are well equipped for this task. You are not. With that warning, I must end my opening message to you. I have much more to relate, and with Bob's kind assistance and patience, these messages will be made available to you, my Terran brothers and sisters. Valus, and peace be yours. I am RK. Communication terminated. Next is. Date of reception, the 7th of October 1988. Introduction, Part 2. Love and Light, my Terran friends. In this second part of my introduction I shall acquaint you with the extent of the Alliance and Carindian presence on Earth. We desire that you become fully aware of the degree to which we have committed ourselves to resolving your problems, as I outlined in Part 1. To begin, let me say that after what we assumed to be the successful elimination of the Omegan influence, we reduced our staff to the skeleton level and closed all but a few of our many bases on Earth and on the Moon. This was due to the initiation of Project TerraWatch, in which we were to be merely observers monitoring your progress free of Omegan control. As I said in Part 1, this was, not to put too fine a point on it, a most premature decision, and as you say, after a time it came back to haunt us. Our return to Earth then began in earnest. As a first order of business, we reopened several of the Terran bases and constructed two entirely new facilities on the Moon, under the craters Plato and Copernicus, which were to be our major operations centers for this revitalized project. Plato Complex, was to be a primarily civilian base. Copernicus Com was to be purely military in function. With these existing and new bases completed and furnished, the influx of personnel began, coming mostly via the California and Massachusetts arrival and indoctrination centers. Nearly all of the previous operatives volunteered to be reassigned to the project, but the extent of our work required the recruitment and training of many thousands of new people to reach the desired complement of personnel. This was not as smooth as we might have wished. Several major setbacks were suffered during this period. Two had a particularly harmful effect. First, an Omegan agent teleported with an explosive device into the Mass Comma I processing center on a suicide mission that shut down the section for 4 months. Second, several of the returnees from the Alliance were in fact double agents who performed sophisticated sabotage on the Calcom and Mass Comma I computers, used in training new operatives, and it became necessary to recall about 70,000 of them to correct what might be called psychological time bombs. The operatives were all scheduled to assume sensitive positions in major world governments, and their defective imprinting would have caused them to be unaware of, or incapable of responding to, certain types of Omegan activity. This would have had a profound if not a crippling effect on our ability to effectively react to Omegan operations. Despite these delays, we are at this time operating with essentially a full staff. The charts to follow being some indication of our presence. Chart number 1, Field Operatives, Region Personnel, United States 151,400, Soviet Union 128,500, Europe, East/West, 94,300, Middle East 42,900, Africa 34,000, Asia, except USSR, 69,200, all other areas 105,000, Total personnel 625,300. Chart number 2. Base personnel. Base site personnel. Massachusetts 24,600. Washington, D.C. 4,100. California 32,800. Europe, UK 22,500. Soviet Union 28,400. China, mainland 18,800. Mideast, Egypt 10,300. Others, C, etc. 87,600. Plato, Luna 1, 65,200. Copernicus, Luna 2, 14,600. Total personnel 308,900. There was also a base on Mars, but frequent attacks by Omegan and Kalron warcrafts led to its being declared indefensible, and it was abandoned. Note, due to changes in policy and operations, only the Massachusetts and California bases are now active. All others have been closed and mothballed in the event that unforeseen needs require reopening one or more of them. These brief listings should serve notice that we are not merely talking a good fight, but are backing up our words with action. It should also shed some light on why the Confederation is at odds with our program on Earth. By any definition, this constitutes a major breach of their interpretation of the non-interference directives, and it is the primary bone of contention between our organizations. We had long since concluded that they could not be reasoned with on this matter, and we had informed them that with or without their approval we fully intended to commit whatever force is necessary to defeat the Omegan presence on Earth and wherever else it exists. The Confederation labeled us intruders and adventurists, and informed us that we were completely on our own. In recent times, however, the Confederation has apparently begun to appreciate that the danger posed by the Omegans is too great to ignore it and hope that it will fade away on its own. Envoys from their high tribunals have approached top alliance official Sub Rosa to explore the possibility of an agreement of mutual interest that would result in the Confederation dropping its opposition to alliance anti-Omegan activity, and offering us comprehensive non-military aid. In turn, the alliance would extend its aegis to Confederation systems if hostile forces pose a threat that they are unable to resist. There is nominal resistance in high alliance ranks, but the pact is expected shortly. Some of this softening of the Confederation's hardline is due to their new awareness that Earth is but one of 17 planets on which this battle is being waged, and that the stakes for success or failure are far higher than losing the involved worlds. Earlier, I mentioned the Kalrons. They are another major alliance foe, similar in purpose and methods to the Omegans, but far less civilized and far more aggressive. Apparently out of common interest, their mutual hatred of the alliance, they have loosely joined with the Omegans, and brought their violent tactics into the arena. To say that this adds a deadly complication to the conflict with the Omegans is considerably understating the scope of the problem. The Kalron Empire thrives on war. They do not usually fight for gain or power, but simply to fight. It is their nature to wage war, and they do it with a damnable efficiency. This alone is a sufficient reason to be alarmed, but the restrictions that govern the Omegan program here and elsewhere, I mentioned them briefly in part 1. Don't apply to the Kalrons. Let me now expand on these limits. They are imposed on the Omegans by a powerful extragalactic group that, for lack of a better name, the Alliance dubbed the Syndicate after the Terran criminal organization. The Syndicate has offered the Omegans its formidable support in our galaxy, if they prove that they merit it. The condition: the Omegans must defeat the Alliance on these 17 worlds or face abandonment by the Syndicate. The UA has sent several formal objections to the Syndicate for its involvement in this galaxy, and has been informed that although they will continue to offer the Omegans their support and guidance, they will not provide economic or military assistance to them in their task. What scarce data is available on the Syndicate now suggests that they are essentially profiteers rather than militarists, and prefer to commit their resources to aid those who will act as their enforcers, while themselves avoiding the untidy business of war. When asked about their possible use of the Calrans, they stated that their interests centered upon those groups that had more rational motives than love of a good battle. At this moment, a tenuous sort of gentleman's agreement exists between the Syndicate and the Alliance. Neither group will overtly endanger the other, nor will the Syndicate bail out the Omegans if they appear to be losing. Neither they nor the Alliance have any great desire to test the other's capability in war, and both appreciate that such an encounter would be costly beyond measure. However, if the Omegans achieve victory, the Syndicate will back them with military and economic power, to the end of Omegan, Syndicate domination of the galaxy. It is this monumental threat to the safety and security of all that they know and love that now moves the Confederation to rethink their ways. In short, then, the Earth is an unknowing host to an interstellar test of power and resolve, for nothing less than the control of the uncounted thousands of worlds in this galaxy. It can be seen from this summary of the situation that the Alliance has taken upon itself a prodigious task indeed, here and on the 16 other worlds like yours. Yet, it's a responsibility that we accept willingly and eagerly. We know the benefits of success, and the terrifying outcome of failure. At this point, the question in your minds must be, what can we do to help? In the material sense, nothing. As I pointed out in the first part of this message, you are just not equipped to meet the Omegans directly. Yet, there is much that you can do to make our work more effective. I will amplify this in later messages, but for now let it suffice to say that your contribution lies in what you can do to influence the thinking of your brothers and sisters on Earth. The Omegans dominate you because you have not adopted a way of life and thought that will render their control ineffective. I must repeat that the Omegans' primary tactic is keeping your world in constant war readiness by creating suspicion, distrust and fear that frustrate any possibility of uniting for the good of the whole. The people of Earth of their own free will adopted the philosophies that sow the seeds of war and nourish them. The Omegans arrived to find a condition that meshed perfectly with their own plans. They did not initiate war on Earth. Your long history of conflict offers ample proof that it has been a human vocation for millennia. What the Omegans did bring was a technologically based way of war that enabled man of Earth to sit in a safe place and cause the deaths of millions by remote control. It's arguable that there was at one time a certain excitement in the hand-to-hand, head-to-head combat of early warfare. It was a test of skills, man against man with life the prize for the victor. Gunpowder took away some of that mystique. Modern war science has eliminated it. For that you must thank the many advancements afforded you by Omegan infiltrators. That Moscow or Washington can vanish in an instant in the searing heat of a micro-sun is one of the many gifts from the Omegans to you. One questions whether man of Earth would find much appreciation for these benefits that otherworldly visitors have bestowed upon your civilization. Yet, you accept them as the price of living in perilous times, unaware that these times are the workings of the self-same invaders who provided your infernal engines of destruction. Poor, sad marionettes, dangling from Omegan strings, marching to their war tunes and believing them to be your own steps and your own brave music. How wisely you say, when the ball is over, the piper must be paid. The payment that your Omegan pipers will exact is dear indeed. It is no less than your souls in their service as they reach outward to conquer and rule by 4-7 more worlds. You, my dear brothers and sisters of Earth, will be their pawns in their galactic game of chess, and like good pawns you will follow their game plan eagerly and faithfully, convinced by their lies and their orations that it is your destiny to take your warlike ways to the stars. And then, dear people, the truth will become known to you and you will weep for your violent, misguided ways. And it will be far too late for other than your flowing, bitter tears. Is this inevitable? No. You can begin this very day, this very moment, to make a difference. You can teach the ways of love and peace, the same great teachings that another visitor to your world, Jesus Christ, once offered. Is teaching enough? Will your students heed your words? Unless you live by them, they will have no effect. Your life must be an example of your philosophies or your words are hollow. In future messages, we of the Alliance and the planet Kurunda will share with you knowledge that guides our thoughts and our lives. We will offer our accumulated centuries of wisdom to provide you with what we hope is a model for your own future. We will tell of many things, to any who will accept our presentations. We will speak of science, of art, of culture, of philosophy, of the many aspects of our life in the service of humanity throughout the stars. We will also tell you of the ways by which we serve the Infinite One, our Universal Father, God. For now, I must end this message, with the promise of many to come. Valus, and peace be yours. I am RK. Next is, date of reception, the 10th of October 1988. Alliance Government. Love and light, my Terran friends. My message, my lesson, if you will, for this evening concerns the ways and means of the United Worlds Alliance, of which Kurunda is but one of almost 740,000 member planets. The EU officially came into being about 650 of your years ago. At that time, Kurunda, one of the founders of the UWA, and about 150 other planets that had for many years formed a loose trade and cultural union, decided that a formal organization was called for, to handle the ever-mounting complexity presented by expanding horizons. These worlds dispatched their highest officials to Kurunda, where the first conclave of Elder Masters took place, dedicated to the goal of uniting the planets into a single body devoted to furthering the common good. After many days of negotiations, suggesting, considering, accepting, rejecting and compromising, the first conclave issued the Pact of Alliance, that rests to this day in the Hall of Archives on Arcturia. This document laid the foundations for the United Worlds Alliance as it exists today. In its preamble are the most stirring words in our history and our present day. Allow me to offer them to you here. We, the diverse planets of the vast realms of space, under the omnipotent guidance of the Infinite One, do hereby ordain that from this day forth, the divers worlds shall be united in the bonds of alliance, friendship and beneficence. We do promise by this pact that we shall be a light in the darkness, a guide for the lost, a shelter for the homeless, a friend to the friendless, a doctor to the ill, a father to the young, a companion to the aged, an aid to the strong, a guardian for the weak. Our embrace encompasses all, none shall be refused, who come to us shall not be found wanting in our realm, who seek us out in time of trouble, we shall give help till order be restored, who join us in time of peace shall be welcomed with the hand of friendship, who choose to be our enemy shall not find us revengeful, yet we shall not be less than strong. Dedication is our cornerstone, service our walls, love our roof. Within this edifice of truth let all come to rest, for a house without tenants is but a shell. Therefore, by these words do we of this first conclave pledge the allegiance of our divers worlds to the united good of all. By this pact do we join in inseparable bond, under the firm but gentle hand of the Infinite One, to forevermore be as one within this, the Universal Alliance, until our heart is stilled and our final breath no longer stirs. This we have decreed. So let it be through eternity. With these inspiring words, the Alliance of Worlds was formed. 150 planets joined in a dream that has flourished these many centuries. The name has long since been United Worlds Alliance, but the great visions of our founders are as fresh today as they were in that hallowed place that for almost 650 years has been a shrine that every Alliance citizen tries to visit at least once. Earlier, I stated that the present count of Alliance Worlds is about 740,000. Although that is the full number, the UWA is now split into five major divisions, of which Kurunda's has 143,000. This segmenting was made necessary by the sheer enormity of the task of attempting to govern so many worlds under one roof. The process of partitioning took place over 4 years, and was ended on your date of September 19, 1986. The system of government that I will now outline came about at the conclave that carried out this mammoth operation. The Council of Elder Masters is still the official ruling body of the full Alliance, but there are now 5 sub-councils that handle the matters within their respective divisions. In turn, these are subdivided into sector councils that each control about 10,000 planets in a specific region of space.